Hello, and welcome to another installment of Podcast 360. I'm your moderator, Amanda Balby, with Cardiology Consultant. I'm joined today by Dr. Shelley A. Cole, who is an associate scientist in genetics at the Texas Biomedical Research Institute and affiliated with the Southwest National Primate Research Center. She has more than 25 years of experience studying human genetics. She is with us today to discuss the Strong Heart study of American Indians and how the results impact practice. Thank you for joining me today, Dr. Cole.
Thank you for having me.
So the Strong Heart study of American Indians is one of the largest and longest running epidemiological and genetic studies of American Indians in the United States. Can you tell us more about this study?
Sure. The Strong Heart study began in 1988, and it was established to study the prevalence and risk factors for heart disease in American Indians. At that time, the prevailing belief was that heart disease rates were low in American Indians. However, physicians working in the communities reported that they were seeing a lot of cardiovascular disease. So the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute of NIH funded the Strong Heart study to determine the prevalence of heart disease and to try to identify its risk factors. The study partnered with 13 tribes in three regions of the U.S., one in Arizona, a center in Oklahoma, and a center in North and South Dakota. And it initially enrolled more than 4,500 tribal members. It was able to show that what we now know, that American Indians have some of the highest rates of heart disease relative to other groups in the U.S., and that type 2 diabetes is a major risk factor. Then in 1988, a family study was initiated to study genetic risk factors of heart disease, and it enrolled extended family members from the original cohort. All in all, more than 7,600 tribal members have participated in the Strong Heart study, and it has conducted five exams. The exams were spaced approximately 5 years apart, three exams in the original cohort and two in the family study. The study also collected a large amount of data and samples, including data on events and causes of death from review of medical records and death certificates. There are currently five funded centers, three field centers, the coordinating center, which is also located in Oklahoma, the cardiovascular center at Cornell, and the genetic center here at Texas Biomed. The data and samples, along with the Strong Heart study infrastructure, make it a national resource for studying American Indian health. In fact, a number of sub-studies and ancillary studies have been conducted that have utilized the Strong Heart study as a resource. And importantly, we partner with the tribes on our research so that the Strong Heart study and all its ancillary studies and publications receive tribal approval before they are started.
Your most recent analysis of SHS is being published in December and revolves around arsenic metabolism, one carbon metabolism, and diabetes-related outcomes. Can you put these findings into perspective for our healthcare practitioners in our audience?
Sure. The Strong Heart study is really lucky because we have expert collaborators from a number of fields. Dr. Ana Navas-Sasien from Columbia University has a group of environmental scientists who led the study that you're asking about. As a bit of background, it's well known that arsenic exposure can have long-term health effects, especially leading to cancer. However, what is less well known is that low-level arsenic exposure below that mandated by the EPA can also increase a person's risk for disease. And Dr. Navas-Sasien's studies have shown this in the Strong Heart study, where low to moderate arsenic exposure, mainly from groundwater in the communities, can lead to an increased risk of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and some cancers. When you want to study arsenic in cohort studies, such as the Strong Heart study, arsenic exposure can be calculated by summing all of the metabolic products of arsenic found in stored urine samples, and then you extrapolate back to estimate individual exposure. And that was what was done in the studies I just mentioned. However, we can also look at the metabolism of arsenic in the body. the metabolism of arsenic shows a little more complicated results when you compare it to disease outcomes than what you find with total arsenic exposure. So we measure arsenic metabolism in the urine by calculating the percentages of the three main metabolic species of arsenic in urine. They all differ by the addition of methyl groups onto inorganic arsenic. And they exist as inorganic arsenic, monomethylated arsenic, and dimethylated arsenic. The dimethylated arsenic, which has two methyl groups, is generally less toxic and is excreted more rapidly through the urine. Decreased metabolism of arsenic, which is represented by higher percentages of inorganic arsenic and arsenic with just one methyl group, has been identified in a number of studies as a risk factor for arsenic-related health outcomes that include cardiovascular disease and cancer. However, in the Strong Heart study, the same decreased metabolism of arsenic is associated with lower risk of diabetes and increased insulin 7 sensitivity. Initially, this was a puzzling result because it's opposite of other associations with arsenic metabolism. As I just said, decreased metabolism of arsenic is associated with increased risk of heart disease and cancer, but decreased risk of diabetes in the Strong Heart study. One hypothesis for explaining this is that the one carbon metabolic pathway plays a role. The reason is that it is the one carbon metabolic pathway that transfers the methyl group onto inorganic arsenic, resulting in its monomethylated and dimethylated forms. So in this study, we wanted to see if the one carbon metabolic pathway or OCM pathway explained the association between decreased arsenic metabolism and lower risk of diabetes. Because we can't measure the OCM pathway directly, we use nutrient intake, essential for the OCM pathway, including vitamin B6, as well as genetic variants in genes involved in the one carbon metabolism pathway to represent or be a proxy for the OCM pathway in our analyses. And the results show that adjusting for OCM nutrients does not affect the previously reported associations between decreased arsenic metabolism and lower risk of diabetes. However, interestingly, in an additional analysis, the OCM pathway itself was associated with diabetes traits, and that's consistent with some other results. First, we found vitamin B6 intake was associated with an increased risk of diabetes. And secondly, a variant in the OCM pathway gene, methionine synthase, was also associated with a lower insulin sensitivity measure. And that association was attenuated after adjustment for arsenic metabolism. So all of this suggests that part of the OCM machinery associated with diabetes risk could influence arsenic metabolism. Also, arsenic metabolism may be a partial mediator of the association between the OCM pathway and diabetes risk. However, all of this still does not completely explain our results. A limitation of our study was that we had a short follow-up, about 5 years, and there's also the possibility of reverse causality in our results. So we need to do further work with a longer follow-up period to confirm these associations, confirm their directions, and move forward towards disentangling all of these relationships.
And another one of the findings from your most recent analysis is that higher vitamin B6 intake was associated with increased risk for diabetes outcomes. There has been a lot of controversy around vitamin supplementation. Some say it's a health benefit, while others say it's actually a health risk. Based on your study results and your professional experiences, are you pro or con vitamin B supplementation for the prevention of cardiometabolic conditions?
That's a good question. I would have to say that the jury is still out as to whether or not vitamin B6 supplementation is beneficial, and if it is, which populations might benefit from it. In my opinion, we just don't have enough evidence yet to make recommendations. In some groups, it could be deleterious, as results from the Strong Heart study and other studies have suggested. Even if it might be beneficial for other groups, those recommendations would be impacted by a person's ancestral background and environmental and dietary exposures. In fact, this is exactly what precision medicine is working towards, defining the best treatment for an individual based upon a number of factors.
So what is the next step in your research?
Well, there's a couple of questions and approaches we're working on at the moment. Following up on Dr. Navasasian's results, which we talked about earlier, one limitation from the study was the lack of biomarkers for OCM nutritional status. If you remember, we used proxy measures of vitamin intake and gene variants, and it's now possible to have comprehensive measures of one carbon metabolism through metabolomics approaches. So we're interested in using metabolomics to better characterize the one carbon metabolism status and its connections with arsenic metabolism and diabetes. Another thing we're working on is that our participating communities have asked that we propose additional intervention studies, especially in the young. So Strong Heart Study investigators and collaborators have several ongoing culturally tailored interventions to mitigate stroke risk, to study ways to provide better availability of nutritional food choices, and there's one by Dr. Navasasian's group on removing arsenic from well water. And those studies have been really well received by the participants and our community partners, and they're asking for additional efforts along those lines. In another area, we have a pilot study assessing fatty liver disease, which some say is the manifestation of metabolic disease in the liver. And we know that liver disease mortality is high in American Indians, but most studies have attributed or assume that fatty liver disease and fibrosis in American Indians is due to heavy episodic alcohol consumption in some individuals. However, we suspect that the high rate of type 2 diabetes and obesity are also likely to blame. And with funding from the Diabetes Institute at NIH, we're beginning to explore that in the hopes that we can have an impact on that aspect of metabolic disease in the communities. And finally, we're awaiting confirmation from our funders at National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute regarding the funding of a next phase of the Strong Heart study. So this would include another examination of all living Strong Heart study and Strong Heart family study members. That would be a sixth Strong Heart study exam. And for some of our surviving original cohort participants, this would generate longitudinal follow-up data of over 30 years. And that's really valuable in epidemiological studies. The next funding would also provide for more community interactions and input. And for the first time, it would fund a small number of pilot studies proposed by the communities. We're very excited about working with the tribal health authorities on that possibility.
What is the one question related to cardiometabolic risk in American Indians you ultimately want to answer?
Well, ultimately, our goal, of course, is to alleviate the high burden of cardiometabolic disease in American Indians. As a geneticist, I focus on inherited causes of disease, but cardiometabolic diseases are what we call complex diseases, meaning that they have both genetic and well-known environmental and behavioral causes. So my ultimate goal is to resolve some of the underlying mechanisms that essentially operate between these risk factors, and identify approaches that will be a benefit to the health of Strong Heart study tribal communities.
Great. Thank you again for speaking with me, Dr. Cole.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak with you about the Strong Heart study.